The National Coronavirus Command Council has decided to enforce a nationwide lockdown for 21 days with effect from midnight on Thursday, the 26th of March.
That was 5 years ago in 2020, when life as we knew it came to an abrupt halt around the world.
China closed off Wuhan, a city of 11 million people, to contain a deadly virus.
It has not been tried before as a public health measure.
In the days and weeks ahead, we expect to see the number of cases, the number of deaths, and the number of affected countries climb even higher.
In the blink of an eye, between one sunset and the next sunrise, the country learns of working from home, going to school through the lens of a computer camera, and shutting down industries.
Fellow South Africans, this is the most definitive Tuma Mina moment for our country. If we act together, if we act now, and if we act decisively, I am sure we will overcome it.
In this mini podcast series, the Jacaranda FM news team will help tell the story of COVID-19, from the so-called Sunday night family meetings with the president to the stories of heartbreak, survival, and learning how to fit a mask. We tell you how COVID-19 shaped and changed our lives forever and educated humanity about our fragile existence. As lockdown regulations were announced globally in country after country, businesses shattered, the stock market experienced a cliff dive, and the economy weakened significantly. Today, Emile Pinard hears from small business owners who suffered immense financial hardship and 5 years later still haven't fully recovered.
The world realized the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic when world leaders followed each other's lead and announced various types of restrictions and lockdowns in late March of 2020. It didn't take long for citizens across all continents to realize the SARS-CoV-2 virus had the power not only to bring our daily routine to an abrupt end, but also cause wider destruction beyond imagination.
To ensure compliance with the government's instruction to stay at home, we will immediately close all shops selling non-essential goods, including clothing and electronic stores. No Prime Minister wants to enact measures like this. I know the damage that this disruption is doing and will do to people's lives, to their businesses and to their jobs.
Non-essential businesses in New Zealand must now close. All bars, restaurants, cafes, cinemas, pools, museums, libraries, playgrounds, any other place where the public congregate must close their face-to-face function.
Today, I'm ordering the mandatory closure of all non-essential workplaces in the province of Ontario. We're prepared to extend this order if necessary. This was a very, very tough decision, but it is the right decision. This is not the time for half measures. This decision was not made lightly, and the gravity of this order does not escape me.
All shops and businesses will be closed, except for pharmacies, laboratories, banks, essential financial payment services, including the JSC, supermarkets, petrol stations, and healthcare providers.
Here at home, President Cyril Ramaphosa announced a complete lockdown starting on the 27th of March. Initially, the lockdown was meant to last 21 days, 3 weeks of all South Africans having to stay home and only permitted to leave for medical reasons and to buy food. This also meant the closure of all businesses except for medical facilities, petrol stations and food stores. But quickly it became apparent that the battle against the pandemic would take much more from us and the lockdown was extended. Restaurants and beauty salons were only allowed to fully reopen in June of 2020. It was too late for many of these particularly small businesses who simply couldn't survive the abrupt halt to their income. Picasso Beauty Salon in Nigel is one of these businesses. Owner Hanalie Duckett and her business partner Lizanne Dimini says they welcome the chance to take a quick breather and expected to open their business doors quite soon.
At first, fine, because it's time off with your family. Obviously, it feels amazing to have time off. We never do. But as time went along and it just kept getting longer and longer, it started getting ridiculous.
Like we said, no work, no pay. So we still have employees to pay, and we had a mortgage to pay, and you've got bills, and we just couldn't do any of that. And being a one-owner business as well, we didn't really came in contact to have that relief that they gave to certain businesses. We weren't eligible for that.
Yeah, not at all. So I was still paying off a building, a bond on my building, and we got payment relief for that, but none of the interest was taken away. The time was extended with extra interest. So it cost you more when you started paying back again. There was no relief. It was a hell of a headache, actually. So what happened was, eventually we decided just to pay the bond, finish the bond. There was little left because the interest would have taken us years longer to pay than it should have.
While at home, Hanalie and Lizanne said they continued to worry about their business. Even though no one was allowed in the streets, they wanted to see for themselves that their salon was still standing and locked. This was when the more sinister side of an already deadly pandemic further reared its ugly head. They said they were harassed by police and Metro Police while trying to inspect their building and make sure water and electricity were still in working order. And there's more. The criminals clearly didn't heed the call to stay off the streets.
We actually had a break-in where they stole all the copper pipes and stuff from the building. So we had to go and fix that during COVID. So it was a lot of water wasted. And then when we were busy there fixing the stuff, the police came and they asked us what we were doing there.
Despite these challenges, on top of fighting COVID-19, Hanalie and Lizanne were also facing the additional concern of having to pay their staff and their expenses. They were facing the reality of financial ruin that the pandemic could bring.
Okay, so what we did is we tried to pay, like, with money we still had, our domestic workers who they need money. I mean, it's not their fault they're sitting at home. And food, that's what we did. So everything else stopped. Car payments stopped, building payments, house payments, and your water and electricity, obviously, you had to pay because they'll just cut you in the middle of COVID.
I had a little bit of savings that I could use for the first month or two, but after that, it was left. So luckily, my fiancé helped, but
and
otherwise
my husband
than
did.
That...
Husbands and fathers did.
Yeah.
But there was no relief for us.
No government relief.
No. All your savings, and you borrowed a little bit more of someone else's savings to survive. So we're still paying back. In a small business, in a small town, you don't catch up. You never catch up again. You survive your months as you always do, and you're used to that. Going to a minus and starting all over again, literally all over again, it's near impossible. It's impossible. You can't do it. We're still struggling.
Marissa Uister is the owner of a coffee shop in a hospital on the East Rand. Despite the fact that the hospital was open and beds were full, she had to close down her coffee shop. 3 weeks later, most of her stock had expired and had to be thrown out. That was on top of the severe impact the disease already had on her business.
We went back to work, but it wasn't actually back to work because the hospital doors wasn't open for public. So we all only catered for staff members. So at our hospital, there's about 100 staff members, and we had to also give them discounted prices because now you need to survive. So actually the only money you get in is the ones from the staff. And I also had to retrench 3 of my staff members because I couldn't pay them anymore. The shop didn't have money to pay them the salaries. So I was running the shop for about 2 years on my own. So I will go in the morning and the staff will let me know on WhatsApp what they need. Let's say a Powerade or a sandwich, I'll make it, lock the shop, go deliver it to the wards because they weren't allowed to leave the wards because it's all sorts of protocols that need to happen before they can leave the wards. And then at that stage, okay, I was alone trying to make my business survive. The hospital was very lenient to us. They said, okay, for this time, you don't need to pay rent because the doors is not open. So that was quite nice of them understanding the situation. But it wasn't enough. You still had to keep up surviving somehow. And then only after, so they announced these visiting hours when they started with the COVID-19 injections. And then it was about once a day, but only one person per bed. But the front door was closed. They only opened the back door and I'm at the front. So it influenced my business a lot because the people go in at the back, go straight to the ward, go home. So they don't really buy something.
There was no money for Marissa to pay herself a salary. And she survived by moving in with her parents and asking for their support. Adding to that, her business did not qualify for any financial assistance.
So there was the UIF that paid out. So at least when you were one of the loyal ones who paid the UIF monthly, your staff could have benefited from that while they were off. But for you as an owner, I'm a sole trade, so I couldn't benefit of anything like that and nothing for my business. So you were just like trying to keep head above waters yourself, try to do some things just to keep your business open. There's a lot of coffee shops that I know of in our industry in the hospital that actually closed down because they couldn't keep head above water.
It was not just small and big businesses that had to find a way to survive in unknown territory. The Small Business Institute says it was also navigating uncharted territory. The Institute's John Tlulu says no one knew how to deal with the impact of the pandemic. Policymakers, small to medium enterprises, and their lobbying groups had no idea what to expect, the extent of what was to come, and how to advise their members.
Yeah, I think we have to go back to the COVID pandemic. I suppose all of us, policymakers, SME owners, ordinary households, were not experienced in how to deal with the pandemic. There hadn't been anything of the sort and scale in the last several decades. So we all have to figure out a way.
Jutlu says, looking back, government erred in its way when it shut down complete sectors instead of what was considered to be unsafe activities.
Government shut down sectors. It did not shut down activities. So that impacted heavily on SMEs. Our impact assessment was that SME owners and SME workers, customers were brutally smacked by that early phase of the shutdown because it sought to regulate and police sectors, not activities. For example, we had the clothing industry also impacted. We had the retail sector opened up so that people could have access to food. But government was not regulating activities.
He says they did call on government to reconsider its lockdown implementation methodology. The Institute thought it would be better for government to regulate activities and not whole sectors, and argued that in this way, small businesses would have been able to adapt to COVID.
If you took the sector approach, you then ended up shutting down some of the activities that are lending themselves to social distancing. By their very nature, small businesses had far fewer people employed than big businesses. So if you allowed them to continue operating, you would have the possibility of them continuing to apply those safety measures.
He says the Small Business Institute commissioned several studies into the cost of the pandemic. They found that small businesses were brutally affected by the various levels of lockdowns and restrictions, but some were gradually able to recover.
We did a study at the time. We commissioned six papers at the Small Business Institute. One of them looked into the impact of COVID pandemic at the time, and it confirmed what we feared, that small businesses were brutally smacked during that period. However, as we learned how to cope and deal with the pandemic, I think the impact got less severe.
A further cement block around the ankles of small businesses and dragging them into rising water was the hidden costs to keep the doors open, even in times of lockdown when these businesses had to be shut. We've already heard from the owner of Picasso Beauty Salon the silent costs that crept in. Kludlu says this emerged as a major problem in general.
I mean, the first cost, obviously, is that you are a price taker, you're not a price setter. So if you had economies of scale, the luxury that is only inherent in running a big business, you could negotiate hefty discounts. But if you're a small business, you take the price that is offered, that is charged of you. So you do not have the benefits of economies of scale and discounts. So, for example, it was only almost after the COVID pandemic that you also had a situation where the Competition Commission announced something called block exemptions. Block exemptions basically mean that you are exempted from punishment and penalties by the small business, by the Competition Commission, if you cooperate, collaborate, collude in a way with other suppliers in the sector. That relief came, but it came way too late into the pandemic. It was actually after the pandemic.
The implementation of these hard lockdowns also had a big impact on the unemployment rate. Like we heard from Marissa, she had no choice but to simply lay off some of her personnel just to stay afloat. Kludlu says 2 million people lost their jobs overnight.
It did. 2 million people lost their jobs almost immediately. And some of those jobs have returned to the economy, but not as much as we are not there yet to pre-COVID levels of employment. Yeah, some people have gone back to work, but more have not gone back to work. I mean, if you look at the people who are the recipients of the SRD grant, the COVID grant, 370 rand, it tells you a bit of the story. It tells you the story that is not immediately captured by the unemployment stats. What is that? It tells you that these are people who are not in employment and who are not in any, who are not receiving any of the social grants, whether it's state old age pension, child grants, disability grants. Those are the people who have actually nothing to rely on. And fortunately, government cushioned them through the SRD grant. And I think through that very prompt intervention, government was able to avert a humanitarian crisis.
Hanalee and Lazan say half a decade on and their salon has still not recovered. Yes, business has improved, but it seems as if those pre-COVID days are lost forever. And for these two businesswomen, it's a very bitter and sad pill to swallow.
I think we do, because it's never been this bad before COVID. So obviously it's from COVID where business just never got back on its feet again, ever.
Yeah,
it's not going to go back to normal.
The amount of clients just dwindled down.
People started.
We were a full house, busy salon every day. And after COVID, it was two or three clients per day, and it got better a little bit, but we're not back to what we were before COVID. It's just people don't have money. The economy since COVID has gone downhill. Like we said, people lost breadwinners. People lost their jobs. And ladies learned how to do their own hair. So that's just it. It never got back to what it was before COVID. It's still not back to what it was.
It's like majority's in the same situation, because in our lives it didn't go back to normal. So theirs obviously not as well. You just don't do it anymore. It's a luxury now. Whereas you used to do it all the time or come visit all the time, it's luxury. Some clients, regular clients, you'd see them like twice a year maybe now. They've learned to stretch their hair. That's what they do.
Or they'll just come in for a cut and a blow dry more often. And then, like she said, the colors and stuff, 2-3 times a year maybe. Or for a special occasion or whatever. But no, it's not back to what it was. Never.
Similarly, Marissa's coffee shop has also not recovered. To keep her doors open, she's been forced to operate with fewer staff, and gone are the days of being open for longer. Marissa is currently studying and working on other projects because this new business model is not enough for her to survive on.
So we do. It actually did go a bit better from about last year, but it's still not the same. And I can't actually put my finger on it. I don't know what it is, but the people doesn't come and visit so often anymore. Usually before COVID, it would be busy. We would have been open from 7 till 9 at night. Now we only open from 8 until 5, and it doesn't impact my revenue at all because we're not back to that revenue yet. And it's just the people are different. It's like they're scared of the hospitals now. And it's not where COVID started. It's actually where the people tried to make better. But it does have an impact. We're not back to the usual trading hours. And we're getting there, but we're not there yet where we were before COVID. The business is not the same anymore.
Luckily for small businesses, since the formation of the new government, the economic outlook for South Africa has drastically improved. Most economists predict a growth rate of around 1.3% for this year, and the Reserve Bank has cut the repo rate. However, with the new Trump administration, the global economy has become unpredictable, and now only time will tell what small businesses have to look forward to. I'm Miel Pinar for Jacaranda FM News.
COVID chronicles 5 years after Moss, thermometers, and my fellow South Africans is an original Jackpot podcast brought to you by Jacaranda FM News. Jacaranda FM cannot be held responsible for the views and comments expressed in this podcast. Follow Jacaranda FM News on Facebook and X, or go to jacarandafm.com and click on news. Listen to more episodes and original series at jacarandafm.com. Click on Jackpot or wherever you get all your other podcasts.